to annex large parts of the occupied West Bank.
يعني الاحتلال يساب
It's part of a larger plan of colonization. The Israeli occupation is racing against time to change the demography of the region. It is seeking to achieve its project, known as Greater Jerusalem, by 2040. Israel plans to establish a state for settlers inside the Palestinian state.
Observers say through settlement expansion, Israel is looking to ensure that within the next decade, 1 million Jewish settlers will live in the occupied West Bank. Today, there are about 500,000 Israeli settlers in the West Bank, with almost 250,000 more living in Jerusalem, Al-Quds. Palestinians say all indications prove that Israel is racing against time to build a new settlement before the outgoing U.S. administration leaves office. The Palestinian Authority has warned that settlement activity has grave consequences in the occupied West Bank and will definitely lead to more Palestinian land grab by the Israeli regime to facilitate the annexation of the occupied territories. منى قنديل, Occupy Ramallah.
More than 4 years since Britain voted by 52-48% to leave the EU, a trade deal is yet to be reached. After it became clear that the UK is hurtling towards a no-deal Brexit, Prime Minister Boris Johnson said Sunday, the two sides are still very far apart on some key issues, but the UK will not be leaving the negotiating table.
What I'll say is I think that the UK should continue to try. And I think that's what the people of this country would want me to do. We're going to continue to try.
Mr. Johnson also called on Britain to get ready to trade on World Trade Organization terms. The UK will also have to decide whether to accept the mini-deals proposed by Brussels to keep planes in the air and lorries with food and medicines rolling. A no-deal might mean rising food prices and the loss of 300,000 jobs. So are Britons worried?
There's scary things like there might not be food on the shelves, like in January and February, because it's going to be a nightmare getting everything through customs. There's the whole Irish border thing. I mean, I can just go on and on and on.
I think, you know, leaving the European Union is a very, very bad idea. I think the decision was probably made by the old people, and the young people have to cope with it in the future.
Boris has let everybody down, left, right and centre. He promised the earth, he promised this ready-cooked deal, and he's just not delivered in any shape or form. It's dreadful. But on the other hand, we can't be blackmailed by Europe.
Preventing a deal is a row over Britain's fisheries. After January 1st, Europe won't have automatic access to British waters anymore, and a no deal will mean zero access. The French are particularly upset about this. Clashes in the English Channel are likely, and the UK has already bolstered its defences there with 4 Royal Navy ships. The EU is calling for calm, though.
Great Britain and Europe are friends, partners, allies, and this will remain the case after Brexit.
The EU's Brexit negotiator is also calling for patience, saying a new trade pact with Britain is still possible this week.
Trade of goods and services, fishing, energy, transport, security of citizens. Never have we negotiated such an agreement in such a short space of time. We've only been negotiating for 9 months.
The EU says that Westminster has to compromise on fisheries, but the UK says it cannot be the only country in the world that does not have sovereign control over its fishing waters. Neither seem prepared to budge, and despite a new deadline, it seems a no-deal Brexit is more and more likely. Bianca Rahimi, London.
The U.S.-backed opposition leader Juan Guaido has once again tried to cause instability in the country by staging a protest vote. Guaido launched a so-called popular consultation vote, asking people to dismiss the legitimacy of the parliamentary elections and the presidency of Nicolas Maduro. The elections, which was boycotted by the opposition, saw the ruling Socialist Party winning more than 2/3 of the seats. Although Guaido said millions of people took part in the event, very few people were seen attending the consultation polling stations. Government officials rejected Guaido's consultation vote, saying he has no political leadership to lead such an event.
Guaido's popularity is tumbling down, and every day he has fewer supporters. He no longer represents the country's opposition.
Nonetheless, a few still stand by Guaido and his political role.
As long as Guaido has the support of the U.S., he will be a political leader and his voice will be heard.
But analysts say Guaido's links with the U.S. are not enough to make him a successful leader, as many have abandoned him in Venezuela.
Opposition members who ran in the past legislative elections broke ties with Guaido due to his anti-electoral stance. His popularity is quickly melting down.
Opposition figure Juan Guaido, the guy who the U.S. still calls interim president of Venezuela, seems to be left alone by most of his former allies and followers, as fewer and fewer people respond to the events he calls own in his own country. Jesus Silva, Caracas.
The United States doesn't elect their leader by a popular vote, but by an electoral college. And that group has just chosen Democrat Joe Biden to be the president-elect of the United States. Biden was selected amid bitter, unfinished, but as yet unproven accusations of massive electoral fraud. Polls consistently show that around 35% of the country believes Biden won due to voter fraud, and the challenges to the nation's electoral integrity seem certain to continue until January 6th, when Congress officially counts the electoral votes.
Trump is going to just keep going on doing what he does, and that's not to the benefit of the country, but obviously we're just moving along, following the rules, and hopefully the democracy is strong enough to keep going.
President Biden going to be in office. Yes, it's time for a change. He's gone. Good. Goodbye.
It now seems unlikely that incumbent Donald Trump can reverse Biden's projected win, and many wonder if Republicans in this gun-filled nation will take to the streets in protest. For months, domestic media stoked fears that a lot of right-wing violence will occur should Trump lose.
A lot, no. Could there be isolated incidents? Sure. But, you know, America is full of over 330 million people, and I would say that 99.999% of them will not do anything violent. They don't want to attack their neighbors, no matter what their neighbors' political thoughts are or how they voted.
However, it's hard to predict what will occur after such virulent accusations of fraud and the long-term demonization of Trump supporters, who did prevail at every election level except the presidential. Protests at Electoral College meeting places were held in multiple states, and the Michigan State Capitol was closed because local police said credible threats of violence had been made. A majority of Democrats never accepted Trump's win as legitimate, and now it seems that a majority of Republicans are opposed to the Electoral College's election of Biden. That makes for a worrying pattern, but the main concern right now is, will there be significant election-related violence? Ramin Mazahari, Chicago.
Angry reactions continue to pour in against the recent normalization of ties between Morocco and Israel. This time, Palestinian Legislative Council in the Gaza Strip held a press conference to condemn the deal that came at the expense of the Palestinian cause.
Normalization is not a normal. It's a misleading term. It is a misleading term. It is a false term. There is no normalization with the occupation in the history. Every country suffered from occupation, tried by all means to defend themselves, even by armed struggle, in order to liberate their land. For this reason, we are refusing normalization of any country, especially a country like Morocco.
Morocco is the fourth state to make such an agreement with Israeli regime since August, despite the Moroccan people's refusal of the deal that has also been struck recently with the United Arab Emirates, Bahrain, and Sudan. The Moroccan king claimed he agreed to start the relations with Israel to expand economic and cultural cooperation and advance regional stability and peace.
These deals can never bring peace for Israel. The current crisis will never come to an end until the last Zionist leaves our land. The normalization deals only embolden Israel to commit more crimes.
Palestinians call on the Arab nations to dismiss these normalization deals and protest against their leaders' decisions that Palestinians consider a stab in the back of the Palestinian cause.
The Israeli regime should be put on trial for its crimes and violations of Palestinian rights in the International Criminal Court. The Arab nations should voice their anger at the normalization deals.
U.S. used Morocco's Western Sahara claim as a bargaining chip in talks with Morocco to secure the deal and agreed to recognize Rabat's sovereignty over the territory.
While the fourth Arab country has started normalizing ties with the Israeli regime, Palestinians here stress that no deal can bring peace to the occupied territories. They say that resistance is the only way to defend the Palestinian rights. Ruba Shabet, Gaza.
The recitation of a poem by Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan during a military parade in Azerbaijan Republic was strongly condemned by the Iranian lawmakers and the government officials. Right after his statements, which Iran believes may fan separatism among Azeri minority, Tehran summoned the Turkish envoy. Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif, in a tweet, rejected the remarks, saying that no one can talk about Iran's, quote, beloved Azerbaijan. Although the Turkish foreign minister has given assurances in a phone call with Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif that Ankara respects the Islamic Republic's sovereignty and territorial integrity, the members of the parliament vehemently slammed such remarks.
In whatever way, direct or indirect, in form of a poem or any other form, such interventionist remarks are vehemently rejected by Iran. We call on the friendly state of Turkey to be watchful about their official statements, which may result in controversy. We respect the territorial integrity of the Azerbaijan Republic and Turkey and expect them to do the same.
The poem recited by Erdogan is ethnically sensitive. A president must know the repercussions of his rhetoric. This was a wrong move by the Turkish president.
Such assertions have always been strongly rejected by the Iranian officials and nation. No one is allowed to talk about Iran's territorial integrity.
Erdogan's statements come as his efforts to join the EU have been futile, and the Europeans impose more and more sanctions on Ankara under different pretexts.
Earlier, the Iranian lawmakers issued a statement condemning the remarks by the Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan, saying that such remarks may put the security of the region at risk. Human Abedi, Tehran.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is a part of a speech delivered on November 3, 2020 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, via video conference on the occasion of the birthday anniversaries of the Holy Prophet of Islam and Imam Jafar al-Sadiq, greetings be upon them, and which coincides this year with the National Day of Fighting Against Global Arrogance and Unity Week.
The recent high prices cannot be really be justified. The Ministry of Industry, Mine and Trade, market regulators, Basij and the other organizations in charge, such as Customs and others, should cooperate with one another to eliminate this problem for the people. All these issues are controllable. Therefore, with coordinated management on the part of these organizations, these problems can be resolved. As for security, the main point is foreign security, as the country should be equipped with defensive equipment such as missiles, drones, planes, and the like, and they're easy building them. Such equipment guarantees the foreign security of the country. In other words, they protect the country against the enemy's greed. We should not think that all problems can be resolved by building missiles. There are some problems that have nothing to do with missiles, but there are also many problems that are related to these defensive tools.
Your light and love, all I see, nothing more I'd ever want to need. My Lord, protect me from dishonor, grant me faith to be stronger.
As for domestic security, our security organizations should be wary of the enemy's infiltration. The main point is enemy infiltration, his infiltration into different organizations for the sake of tempting individuals. This is the main problem. They should do something to resolve this problem. The same is true of culture. The officials of cultural affairs should make intelligent efforts. Sometimes, the volume of our cultural work is really large, but such activities should be done in an intelligent manner. In other words, we should know what we need in every area and what cultural work we should do, and then we should implement it. In my opinion, if these things are done, the issues related to the economy, security, and culture are three main issues that could be resolved with acumen, harmony, and persistence. Well, officials are thankfully busy working. They should work a little more seriously so that the task will be accomplished.
Alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah. All praises to Allah, all praises to Allah.
Hi, good morning.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning.
Morning, sir.
Half a kilo of halim, please.
Hi,
sir. Hi, Kitty. Good morning.
1, hands up. Number 2, hands on the waist.
Hi, good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Get ready for jogging to warm up.
Hello, good morning.
Hello, good morning.
One loaf of well-baked bread, please.
The Supplication on Fridays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, the first before the bringing forth and the giving of life, and the last after the annihilation of all things. The All-Knowing who forgets not him who remembers him, and decreases not him who thanks him, and disappoints not him who supplicates him, and cuts not off the hope of him who hopes in him. O Allah, I call thee to witness, and thou art sufficient witness, and I call to witness all thy angels, and the inhabitants of thy heavens, and the bearers of thy throne, and thy prophets, and thy messengers, whom thou hast sent out, and the various kinds of creatures thou hast brought forth, that I bear witness that thou art Allah. There is no God but thou, thou alone, who hast no associate nor any equal, and thy word has no failing nor any change, and that Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, is thy servant and thy messenger. He delivered to the servants that with which thou charged him, and he struggled for Allah as is his due. And he gave the good news of the truth of reward, and he warned of the veracity of punishment. O Allah, make me firm in thy religion as long as thou keepst me alive, and make not my heart to swerve after thou hast guided me, and give me mercy from thee. Surely thou art the giver. Bless Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, and make me one of his followers and his partisans, and muster me in his band, and give me the success of accomplishing the obligatory observance of Friday, and performing the acts of obedience which thou hast made incumbent upon me within it, and receiving the bestowal which thou hast apportioned for its people on the day of recompense. Thou, only thou, art the mighty ones.
The Debate.
Hello and welcome to Debate. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us.
According to the International Criminal Court, it has confirmed that there is a reasonable basis to believe that members of the British Armed Forces committed the war crimes of willful killing, torture, inhumane cruel treatment, outrages upon personal dignity, and rape and or other forms of sexual violence. And what do you think the ICC did when they found out this information? They closed the case. That's right. We will be taking a look at Western privilege in the international arena and the lack of accountabilities for lives lost or destroyed in developing countries. In this debate, this hour, I'd like to welcome to the program out of London, Press TV's Richard Sudan, and out in Edinburgh, author and commentator John White. Thank you both for being with us. Starting it off with Richard. Well, Richard, tell me about what's being said on that side of things. It is quite curious that after admitting that there were war crimes committed, that the ICC then closed the case.
I mean, I think, Marzia, in your introduction, you mentioned the phrase Western privilege, and I think that's a really good starting point. I mean, frankly, there are going to be scores of human rights lawyers and experts, scores of anti-war activists that are going to be looking at the decision by the chief prosecutor who said there's no case for the British to answer to, with utter disbelief, because in spite of all of the accounts, all of the testimony, all of the evidence that's been put forward, really, in addition to what we already knew, it seems something that, on the one hand, there's been some sort of admission that the British Army military command did indeed contribute to suspected war crimes committed against the Iraqi detainees. But on the other hand, I think the decision mentioned that it's satisfied that the British authorities conducted their own investigation. On what planet, amid what semblance of fairness and true democracy, can the party which is being accused of committing the war crimes somehow be the vindicator that there were none committed? It beggars belief, and I suspect the international community is really looking at this decision with a kind of side-eyed squint, also in a sense of disbelief, as are much of the British people.
All right. Well, John, let me get you in on this conversation. What do you make of this? How is that, from a legal perspective, I mean, how does it make sense? So there is a court. The court says, yes, we see proof of war crimes being taken out and that's taken place, and yet the case is closed. And what type of signal, what message does this basically send to the world?
Well, good evening, Amina, and good evening, Richard. There are times when the truth is not enough, and when only the unvarnished truth will do. And when we come to an unvarnished truth of this development, let us be honest, this is not about Western privilege per se, this is about white supremacy. The problem disfiguring our world to be is not the lack of democracy within states, it's the lack of the democracy between states. And this merely confirms it, because what we have are a clutch of Western imperialist countries, of which the UK is a prime member, who do not see themselves as upholders of international laws, but arbiters of international laws, which means to say they get to decide what constitutes war crimes and what does not. And in this case, what we are seeing is the white supremacy of the British imperial state at work. Its soldiers can never be accused or prosecuted for committing war crimes. Because why? Because they're on the good side in this eternal war against the black and brown other. No ifs, no buts, no maybes.
Let me also welcome our next guest. Out of London, author and political commentator, Jonathan Fryer. Jonathan, thanks so much for being with us. Now, Jonathan, the reason the ICC says it is dismissing this is because the UK is investigating itself. Your take on what exactly that means?
Well, there have really been two stages to the British investigation. For several years up until 2017, there was something called the Iraq Historic Allegations Team, or IHAT. And they had legal teams in court which listened to the claims of people from Iraq who said that they had been tortured or mistreated in various ways. And there were well over 3,000 such claims. And although 70% were dismissed as perhaps unreliable, that still meant that hundreds of people had got legitimate claims. But in fact, the cases fell apart because of the evidence not being strong enough. And instead, what's happened is that now the British military themselves are looking into any prolonged appeals. And it was interesting that the ICC, in its judgment in abandoning the case, now has said that they did believe that the British military were looking at this. But of course, for the victims and their families, there is no justice in this.
Well, now, John, do you think that for international organizations such as the ICC, that the value of lives differ depending on the part of the world one is from?
Oh, indeed, yes. We live in a world underpinned by the values of might is right rather than right is might. And the IEC in this decision has proven itself to be unfit for purpose. We need to move beyond this idea that a certain group of countries based on military might and economic power have the right to determine what is just and what is not just. If these were Iranian troops, if these were Venezuelan troops, if these were Cuban troops involved in these activities or accused of these activities, it would be an entirely different narrative. This is about imperialism, no ifs, no buts. And I just have to say this. I am appalled as a citizen of the United Kingdom how dehumanized people of Iraq, of Syria, of Iran have been treated in terms of their value. And they have been pushed outside the circle of human worth that is established in the name of Western imperialism. And this is a very, very sordid and squalid turn of events. And I hope many people in the West will finally wake up to the injustice and the barbarism and the cruelty that has been perpetuated in their name. And unless they do, the world is headed for perdition. This is nothing more than imperial power writ large. There is no justice here. There is no legal pretext here. It's all about power. And until we move beyond that, move into a world where it's about underpinned by justice, regardless of country, regardless of culture, then, I foresee that we're headed for a very bad end.
Jonathan, ICC prosecutor Fatou Bensouda says that the UK has been using mechanisms to investigate itself, but then admits that this 10-year investigation has not led to anyone being convicted. It's quite amazing that on the one hand, she's saying that they are capable of actually judging themselves, but on the other hand, no one has been convicted and paid a price. So as our other guest said, would it be the same thing if we were talking about another country such as Iran, or, as he said, Venezuela?
Well, it might well be different in those cases. One can't know unless a particular case comes before. As I mentioned earlier, the problem was in the case of British soldiers in Iraq that the evidence was not strong enough linked to individual soldiers or commanders that would actually enable anybody to be successful.
Jonathan, who determined that the evidence was not strong enough? The ICC.
The ICC accepted what the British had, the British government and the British military had decided through the Iraqi
scheme.
And that what we have a situation, though, I think we have to admit, and probably John would agree with me on this, is that the real problem is the whole idea of European or North American countries intervening in a situation such as Iraq. Many millions of people, including myself in Britain, demonstrated against the Iraq war and thought it was a terrible mistake. And those sorts of interventions in countries that have a completely different culture and ethnicity and so on almost inevitably lead to various types of abuses. And this is something which I think has to be approached, and I would say in two ways. First of all, that these sorts of interventions should not be entered into as lightly as they have in the past. And secondly, the rules of engagement need to be much more closely monitored so that people are not able to commit the sort of abuses which undoubtedly happened in the case
of Iraq. Jonathan, you're just jumping in here, listening to what you're saying, but at the end of the day, you say that they should not, these countries like the UK, should not be involved or not get involved very easily or likely in these regions. But of course they do. And on the other hand, the ones who are paying the price are the people of this region, not the aggressors, not the ones that are coming in. At the end of the day, if we're looking at, for example, Iraq, that millions of people have been displaced. That country has never gone back to the where it was prior to the war. Yes, Saddam Hussein is gone, but so is security and so many other things. And so many people have been tortured, and so much abuse has taken place. So then the question is, so who pays? Who pays? We're looking right now at the ICC saying, well, the Brits are going to investigate themselves, but these were the same ones, based on a lie, who went into the country to begin with, that they had no right to go into, because, of course, we know now that there were no weapons of mass destruction.
Well, I agree, Marzia, absolutely, that the intervention in 2003 was not only unjustified, but as many of us would believe, totally illegal. But we have a situation when you say who is going to pay for what has happened in Iraq, and it is a tragic case. It is unfortunately many of the individual citizens and the communities in Iraq who are paying the price, and it's a terribly high price, which is why there needs to be a complete rethink, of, as I said, of engagement in foreign wars and foreign interventions.
Okay. Let me get John. Jonathan. Let me get John back in on this. Yeah. John, do you think that this verdict from the ICC prosecutor Fatou Bensouda is connected at all to what happened back in September, when Bensouda and the ICC ruled that there was enough evidence to investigate the U.S. for war crimes in Afghanistan, and after that ruling, the U.S. sanctioned her? Do you see any type of connection that perhaps there are threats, intimidation being exerted on her? Your thoughts on that side of things?
Well, there's absolutely a connection here. I mean, but I just need to go back to something Jonathan said. Jonathan Fry is somebody I hold in the highest esteem, but I must take exception to his description of the war in Iraq as a mistake. Nomenclature is very important before it unlocks the keys to human consciousness. This war was not a mistake, it was a crime. It was a war crime, it was an atrocity. And the problem that we have in British culture is that every war since the Second World War is perceived and is presented as a rerun of the Second World War, i.e. the good war, i.e. that we are the good guys in this war, and that who we are up against are the bad guys. Saddam's Hitler, Rouhani's Hitler, Maduro's Hitler, Castro's Hitler. Do you understand the pattern here? This is national myth presented to the British public as reality. We are the good guys, we are never the bad guys, and our troops can never commit atrocities. Until we break free from these shackles of false consciousness, then I say the world will always be in a perennial state of destabilization, of chaos, of mayhem, and of huge human suffering. Peoples of the global south cannot afford our propaganda any longer, because it has been the result, it has been the product of their unremitting suffering. We must bring this to an end, and it's incumbent on people like me and Jonathan to be people in the West, in Britain, to make that case unremittingly, regardless of the personal cost to us and our careers.
Well, Jonathan, when the U.S. treats an international organization in the way that Washington treated the ICC, doesn't it show the lack of sovereignty and legitimacy that perhaps the ICC has to begin with?
Well, of course, the United States and its behavior is a particular case, which one shouldn't generalize with other countries necessarily in Europe. The United States has never been shy of putting pressure on other countries or institutions such as the ICC, and as you know, it refused to engage with the ICC and has withdrawn from other international treaties and organizations because it refuses to accept the universal nature of the international law and the rule of law. And as we've seen with the policy towards Iran, of course, and with maximum pressure under the Trump administration, they are prepared in Washington not only to put pressure from America, but also to coerce other countries to try to get them to follow suit. One hopes that this situation will change over the coming months, and certainly there is great resistance amongst many European countries into being coerced in that way, and there's great support for the work of the ICC amongst most European member states.
Well, John, the majority of cases prosecuted by the ICC deal with African countries. This seems to hint at the high level of abuse which has been committed by African leaders. However, if we look at the number of people killed and affected in Afghanistan and Iraq by the U.S.-led coalition, one would assume that countries such as the U.K. and the U.S. should be at the top of the agenda of ICC for investigating and prosecuting war crimes. Your thoughts?
Well, Malcolm X said it best. I mean, if you don't understand what's going on in the Congo, you can't understand what's going on in Mississippi. There is a circular relationship between the social and economic injustice taking place in Western countries and the foreign policy of imperialism, colonialism, and oppression that is underway perennially by those same Western countries. And people who are the victims of oppression in those Western countries, until they wake up to the reality of their condition and the whys and wherefores, then there will never be freedom for the rest of the world. And I just hope and pray that people in the US, people, the 40 million who lack healthcare, the families of the over 200,000 who have died from COVID, the families of the over 60,000 who have died from COVID in the UK, they wake up to the reality and move beyond the propaganda, the flag waving, the nationalism, the sense of patriotism. Until they move beyond that, then the world, never mind themselves, but the world will not be free. And I look forward to that day happening soon. I really do hope so.
Well, we all hope so, that's for sure. But Jonathan, when there is so much inequality in the international arena, even the criminal court, doesn't this send a message to developing countries that they must strengthen themselves militarily because might makes right?
Well, I certainly would agree that developing countries have every reason to be disappointed, to put it mildly, in the way that the ICC has tended to focus on Africa. There have been a few other cases recently which are a little more broad, but I would not particularly want to urge countries to spend their scarce resources on yet more military weapons. One of the problems of developing countries, including in Africa, is that too many governments spend far too much on arms and not enough on making sure that their populations are properly fed and educated. So although I can understand the resentment, I think rushing out to buy more arms is not the answer.
What your thoughts on that, John? Because it seems that that is exactly the signal that is being sent, that you have to be strong militarily, and basically you can get away with anything. Now, what Jonathan said, when talking about African countries,
in theory, Jonathan is absolutely correct, but in reality, they have no choice because they're under risk of being invaded. Ask Muammar Gaddafi's ghost if he should have spent more money on arms, if he should have given up his chemical weapons program in 2003 when he did. Ask the people of Iraq. Ask the people of Iran who are suffering under these barbaric sanctions if they think their country should spend less on arms in order to put up a deterrence against the vultures that are circling their country right now. This is all about racism. It's racism writ large. It's colonialism, it's imperialism in our time. And imperialism is the external oppression of white supremacy. And until we move beyond white supremacy, there will be no progress and there will be no emancipation for the entire world.
How do we move beyond, John? How do we move beyond this white supremacy?
We are living in a period of interregnum between the dying of the old world and the coming into being of the new. The rise of China, the strategic threat of Russia, that is the new world. The sun is setting in the west and it's rising in the east. But in the period in between is a period of struggle, and it's a very dangerous period, because no empire leaves the stage of history without a hard-fought struggle. And that struggle is being waged now. And I just hope that the people of Iran, of Venezuela, of Cuba, of Russia and China continue to hold the line, because people in the West of consciousness and conscience are depending on them to free us all.
And on that note, I appreciate both of you being with me on this debate. Author and political commentator Jonathan Fryer out of London, and out in Edinburgh, John White, author and commentator. And as always, we appreciate you being with us on another debate. I'm Marzia Hashemi, signing out for myself and other crew right here in Tehran.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
The United States should be working to de-escalate conflict in the Middle East, not fueling it by selling more and more weapons to regimes, using them to kill civilians, tweeted Senator Bernie Sanders in reaction to the recent Republicans and Democrats voting down resolutions aiming to block the Trump White House's lame duck sale of $23 billion worth of F-35, Reaper drones, and missiles to the United Arab Emirates. Dear listeners, stay with us for an article in this regard written by Jake Johnson Ryder. This article is published under the heading, Shameful, Senate Republicans and Democrats Kill Effort to Stop Trump's Lame Duck Sale of F-35 and Drones to UAE. Here's the details of this article. Most Senate Republicans and a pair of Democrats teamed up on Wednesday, December 9th, to vote down resolutions aiming to block the Trump White House's lame duck sale of $23 billion worth of F-35 Reaper drones and missiles to the United Arab Emirates, ignoring warnings that providing the West Asian nation with more high-tech weaponry would further implicate the U.S. in mass murder of civilians. With the exception of Senator Ron Paul, every Republican senator present voted against the pair of Democrat-led resolutions. Senator Kristen Sinema joined the GOP in voting against both resolutions, while Senator Mark Kelly voted in favor of blocking the F-35 sale, but against blocking the sale of Reaper drones to UAE, a partner along with the U.S. in the Saudi-led assault against Yemen. As HuffPost Akbar Shahid Ahmad noted, the Defense Unit of Military Contractor Raytheon, which is crucial to the drones being considered, is based in Arizona, a possible reason behind the two Arizona Democrats' vote. The two failed resolutions were sponsored by Senators Robert Menendez and Chris Murphy and Paul. The Senate today faced a clear choice: defend human rights and prevent atrocities against civilians, or roll over to Trump and his corporate cronies. Many chose the latter. Erica Fain, advocacy director at Win Without War, said in a statement recently, "The decision to stand idly by as Trump rammed through a last-minute $23 billion arms sales is shameful." Citing survey data showing overwhelming public opposition to arms sales to the UAE, Fain called on the incoming Biden administration to stop these sales from moving forward, meet its campaign promise of ending U.S. complicity in the war against Yemen, reset U.S. relations in the region, and restore U.S. credibility as a partner for peace. The Trump administration's effort to lock in the massive arms sale just weeks before Inauguration Day comes after the president took credit for brokering a peace deal between the Zionist regime and the UAE in August. Critics were quick to warn the agreement had absolutely nothing to do with peace, an argument bolstered by the subsequent U.S. attempt to rush through a sale of 50 F-35 aircraft, 18 Reaper drones, and a massive stockpile of missiles to the United Arab Emirates. The Zionist regime of Israel lobbied in support of the weapons sale. Jared Kushner, Trump's son-in-law and senior advisor, was reportedly a key driving force behind the arms deal and recent efforts to prevent the Senate from blocking it. The United States should be working to de-escalate conflict in the Middle East, not fueling it by selling more and more weapons to the regimes, using them to kill civilians, tweeted Senator Bernie Sanders, who voted to stop the sales. Paul Kavika Martin, Senior Director for Policy and Political Affairs at Peace Action, said in a statement recently, "Republicans should be ashamed for voting to sell deadly drones and F-35A jets to the United Arab Emirates, a country known for war crimes, human rights abuses, and causing Yemen famine. These votes send a strong message from Senate Democrats to the Biden and Harris administration to rethink arms sales," said Martin, "especially to countries who may not always hold American interests nor uphold human rights like the United Arab Emirates and Saudi Arabia regimes."
Good morning.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.